Welcome to Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres just came off their first series loss after eight series wins following the All-Star break. It was quite a run. Oh, well. Lost 2-3 at Coors Field. Padres Twins coming up as we tape this on a Monday. Ryan, where do you want to start?
I'd like to start talking about Ha-Sung Kim. The big news to come out of that Padre-Rockies series probably wasn't the Padres losing 2-3 in Denver. It was what happened yesterday. Ha-Sung Kim dives back to first on a pickoff attempt, appears to jam his shoulder. To me, the thing that was a little disconcerting was how immediately he appeared to know something was very wrong. Was in the dugout within seconds and, you know, spiked his helmet with his good arm as he was walking in. This is his right shoulder, his throwing arm. Kevin, what have we heard, if anything? B, how does this change the dynamic going forward on a team that has a lot of shortstops?
Nothing yet. Imaging today. We'll find out here in a couple hours. One caveat, because you are absolutely right. And virtually any other player, I would say, oh, yeah, I mean, we can basically count on that he's done. And that is probably the case here based on his reaction. If we're going to go on how those of us who have covered sports for a long time, watch sports for a long time. Okay, that one looks serious based on his reaction. Ha-Sung Kim, I cannot count the number of times has walked off the field and you thought, oh, my goodness, this is really serious. And he's in the lineup the next day or two days later. Right. So, you know, maybe there's some hope because he has started to hit better. It is a dynamic where this team that is, you know, a team that is has its depth, that has its inner, you know, these pieces that Mike Schilt can move around, be that starting, be that guys coming off the bench in particular, you know, take a guy out who has been hitting better. And that's a big deal. Now the Padres probably as well equipped as anyone to shove a shortstop in a hole. What do I think they'll do? It seems that Jake Cronenworth would be the answer. And I 100% get that because Xander Bogaerts has worked really hard and you have created this situation where he's your second baseman. Mm-hmm. I don't wonder if the best move isn't Xander back over to shortstop where he's played for a decade and your best second baseman by far is Jake Cronenworth and he's at second. And I think that to me is the answer. I'm going off of what they seem to have been leaning toward in the past. Now, maybe that was leaning toward when Ha-Sung was going to be out a few days. If this is like a season-ending injury, then maybe it's Xander back to shortstop.
Yeah, and then, I mean, that would be Bogaerts maybe potentially back to shortstop. Cronenworth moves from first to second. Luis Arraez plays every day at first. Then they go figure it out with a DH. Is that basically it?
Yeah, because then you have, you would hope in a couple weeks, 3 weeks, maybe Tatis coming back. But even before that, yeah, you alternate Arraez and Solano. You've got guys having, you know, right now it's Xander does a DH day every 4 days and, you know, Arraez does every other. And when does Solano mix in? And so it would just take out that dynamic and you're one guy short of that sort of like pool of depth that you've had.
Sure. The idea then you would think, and again, this is pure speculation. Nobody has said anything yet, but the idea would just be more at bats for Donovan Solano rather than calling somebody up and throwing them into the daily mix.
If someone was going to be called up, they would have been. Donovan Solano deserves that. They're better with, you know, Donovan Solano in there doing things that he has done here in the past for them. I don't see now. Got to call someone up, but call someone up and put them in the mix that I'm in. I don't see that as anything that is workable.
Right. So Eggy Rosario, if he's walking.
Andy, I knew we were going there. You were finding it a way. I don't even know what Eggy's numbers are.
Not good.
Okay. Yeah. What I do know is that they don't have a lot of depth down there that is like major league ready and certainly not better. That's been one of the great things about them. Is the guys that are here are producing.
Right. Absolutely. Again, just thinking ahead of guys who might be able to fit that bill a little bit. You know, maybe you could go with Lockridge, who's down there, guy you got from the Yankees for Aniel Diaz. So the deadline. This team is there's so much positional versatility on this team, Kevin. You don't necessarily need to call up an infielder, do you?
You have Tyler Wade,
right?
That is true. I think you've got Tyler Wade that can do that. without a doubt. I don't think that it really matters. It's not like, oh, wow, what do you – no, they have that versatility. So that's a good thing.
Of course. Right. First of all, one thing that does make me a little nervous here on the Ha-Sung Kim thing, he told our Jeff Sanders yesterday, I definitely never had a feeling like this before. And as soon as the injury happened, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to play anymore in today's game, of course. But when a guy who is removed from games somewhat frequently says, I've never had a feeling like that before, I'm not sure that that bodes particularly well for him.
It absolutely does not. I mean, like I said, and I'm not, all I'm pointing out is two, three times, and I'm talking a half a dozen times, mm-hmm. but two or three times, absolutely convinced Ha-Sung Kim was done. And people on the organization were like, oh, wow, back in the lineup in a matter of 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. So we'll see.
Was it last season or earlier this season where he either got hit or hit a foul ball off his own leg and the noise he made, you could hear the screaming from the upper deck?
That was last season, I believe. It might even have been 22, but like I said at the outset,
yeah,
it's so frequent. And I'm not, like, again, I'm not making light. I'm not anything. It's just, it's happened so many times and everyone has noticed it.
Right.
People in the organization, those of us who watch it all the time, this is not a surprise. Again, you are probably right, Ryan. Right. This looked different.
It did. Can we talk about Ha-Sung Kim for a little bit? You know, in some spaces on social media, he's been a little bit of a polarizing player this year. His offensive numbers are down. His shortstop
polarizing on social media. Sorry, go ahead.
His offensive numbers are down. He's been an average hitter at best. Defensively, I think he makes the routine or the difficult plays look routine, and it's sometimes hard to judge a guy based on that. On the other hand, he has made some uncharacteristic errors, especially earlier this year. They have a very interesting mutual option coming up at the end of the season with him. You know, what do you make of Ha-Sung Kim's place on this team sort of now and going forward?
With the money owed, the performance that has been given this year, and I would almost argue the performance that's been given really even in his best year.
Right.
Now, had he kept ascending, which to his credit, he had his first 3 years in the major leagues, then, and let's say that this year was better than last year, then given his popularity, and that's his popularity out of the clubhouse, you know, fans, and most importantly, in most cases, in the clubhouse. So I would say I'd be having a different argument. But if last year was a peak for Ha-Sung Kim, and this year and the year before were more like it, then I don't see where a club that has the money situation that it does.
Right.
And the positional, you know, backup that it does.
Right.
And
right.
You have, I'm just telling you, Leo DeVries is their number one prospect, no matter what the prospect rankings say.
Right.
Internally, he's their number one. Around baseball, he's their number one. I don't see where, now Ha-Sung Kim could be a second baseman, but that's weird because you have Xander Bogaerts from now till the end of time. So, like, I just don't see where Ha-Sung Kim fits. And a lot of times, like, I don't base that on Ha-Sung Kim as much as I just do the whole situation. Ha-Sung Kim is great to have on your team. But
right.
You have to take – you can't operate in a vacuum, right? Like, the world isn't Twitter. Like, we got to take into context here more than 280 characters. And you take that all into context, and I don't see how Ha-Sung Kim fits.
Right. I mean, we talked, like, in May – about, you know, it was almost a certainty that the Padres would not have both Luis Arraez and Ha-Sung Kim on their team next year. They may not have either. I mean, given what Arraez will certainly command from an arbitration, right? It's one more year of arbitration, correct, with Arraez? And then, you know, Kim hitting free agency if both sides don't trigger this mutual option for $8 million. I mean, to me, that is a big offseason discussion, I think.
And mutual options are generally, they're not happening. That's just the way it is. Go back and look at mutual options and see how many times that has meant that a relationship continues on those terms.
Right.
Could there be a way that Ha-Sung Kim stays because the free agent market isn't there for him? Like, heck, it wasn't there for Jurickson Profar 2 years ago after, you know, a fine performance over three seasons with the Padres. That market wasn't there for Jurickson. I don't know. It used to be you could almost guarantee a guy like Ha-Sung Kim, oh, he's going to make his money. That's not the case anymore, man. Mm-hmm. Bad teams have young players they want to play.
Yeah.
Right?
You're right. Yeah.
And maybe again, I'm not – Hassan Kim has certain limitations. And, you know, Hassan Kim's not going to come in and be your veteran leader. No. He doesn't speak English. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like – that's just a fact. Like, I'm just trying to ask, like, what does Hassan Kim bring to your team mm-hmm. where he's going to be worth $10 million?
Right. And well, and how about this? Not $10 million once, $10 million a year for a while. And, right. you know, that's the thing to me. And again, this is not to dismiss the kind of player he is.
It feels I know I'm being really negative on him, but yes, it's not. It's just, right. you asked me reality.
Yeah. Well, and this is the kinds of problems that good teams have, Kevin. Too many good players, not enough spots. Yeah. You know, at some point, this is what good teams have. And I think despite losing two of three, we can still count the Padres.
Hassan Kim, if he stays healthy, let's say this is nothing, yeah. right? Or it's something that he comes back and then he finishes strong and the Padres win the World Series. Mm-hmm. Hassan Kim may have a great market because his agent is good and finds a way to say, hey, mm-hmm. this guy was huge to the Padres and finds that, you know, there are numbers. By the way, Hassan Kim's like third or fourth on the team in WAR. Now, right. defense plays a huge deal in that, especially we're talking F WAR here. Right. So the guy has value big time, mm-hmm. but when you got to look at the whole context of what he means to the Padres, what the Padres have, the money and the Padres situation with the money. And I just don't see a place.
Right. And this is where I whisper something into the microphone, Kevin. They also have two outfielders who think that they're shortstops.
Yes, especially one thinks he's a shortstop. The other thinks he's a shortstop, but I'm getting the impression Jackson Merrill has sort of fallen in love with center field.
Yeah. Well, it looks like he has fun out there. And he was talking about the freedom of just chasing a ball, right? And I think there's something to that. It's that he sees that as freedom and not as an obligation.
Right.
It speaks to him, I think.
Now, he'd go play wherever they asked him to. Right. But, and I mean that, like he would. And he'd probably be good at any of those middle spots. He'd probably be good anywhere. But it seems to have kind of really – and you know what? Beginning of the year – and I'm not saying their minds aren't still open. But beginning of the year, they were probably like, yeah, we'll see. He might be a middle infielder for us. He might be our shortstop.
Sure.
They didn't have any idea how good he was going to be in center field.
No.
So no. I'd say it's all up in the air, which that is not to say that, like, your point isn't valid, right? Like mm-hmm. – Tatis would move back to shortstop in a heartbeat. So, and maybe they're better with Tatis there. And, but like I said, they have a prospect who they think is like, and a lot of people think is fantastic. And so he's probably 2 years away.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, he's a teenager still,
he's where we were talking about Tatis in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right.
I forget where Tatis was at that point, but like Tatis was probably getting more talk at that time because of where the Padres were. I mean, first off, he's getting more talk San Diego because like it was what you had to hope for in 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. And then you got to look at the prospects too. Like the mm-hmm. prospect game has changed and, you know, they're just in that short amount of time, like Leo DeVries is in this like vast ocean of prospects that people are talking about and our teams are willing to promote quickly. But that doesn't mean he's not, you know, I'm not saying he is by any means. I'm the guy who's always tempering expectations about prospects, but doesn't mean he's not every bit as good as Jackson Merrill or Fernando Tatis Jr. because they believe he is.
Right.
They have sort of been right, by the way.
Yeah. When they make those calls, they're rarely wrong. And it seems like when they trade guys who they don't think are at that level, that they rarely get burned.
Remember, they're not the guys ranking their prospects.
That's right. And so, by the way, they're not sharing their rankings with the rest of us either, right? They like.
They might think their number five is a number three. They might think their number five is a number 12.
Right.
They might think Adam Mazur they might see things that he's going to be really good. They might see things that they go, you know what? Robbie Snelling, he wasn't as good as we thought. I'm talking about a couple of the guys who were traded, to Miami. They might think, hey, we really, we sold long to get a benefit of Brian Hoeing and Tanner Scott, but we don't, man, we're really bummed we lost these guys. We don't know.
And here's a general baseball tip. to casual listeners and people tuning in for the first time. If your nickname is El Mutante, you're probably good. And Leo Dallas DeVries, his nickname is El Mutante, the mutant.
If it sticks, then yes.
That's a fantastic nickname to have. Padres Twins, interesting week here at Petco Park. Padres play 7 in a row. They play every day against the Twins for 3 and then the Mets for 4. Let's start with the Minnesota Twins. This is a good team, but there's a caveat here. They get a little bit of a vacation every time they play in Chicago, huh?
Whew, goodness gracious. And look, maybe not the best time to be talking about it. The Padres come off of their series. They finished 5-8 against the Rockies. But just let me tell you how bad the White Sox are, according to everyone who has seen them, according to their record, according to their, you know, record losing streak. Like, the Twins are a half a game better than the Padres? They both have 70 wins. I think they have one less loss than the Padres. The Twins are 12-1 against the White Sox this year. The only two teams that are in playoff position who have the worst two teams in playoff position in terms of their record against winning teams are the Twins and the Royals, who are tied for the last wild card spot and who are both in the AL Central. So look, you know, I'm a big believer in how do you do against losing teams, because that's how you build your record. I got no problem with them beating up on the White Sox. I don't know that it tells you anything other than that they took advantage. They took better advantage than the Padres did of the Rockies. But time and time again, you get a break to play the White Sox. You get a break to some extent. I know the Tigers have some really good players and some good pitchers. You get a break to play them. The Royals have also fattened up big time on, like, they're 9-10 under, I think, against winning teams. So that means they're like 25 over against losing teams, which, again, that's how you build your record. I'm just saying that's a real alarm bell for the Twins. That said, look at their overall statistics. They're about the same team as the Padres.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, the Padres, I think, catch a little bit of a break here, too. Stop me if you've heard this one before, Kevin. Byron Buxton's hurt. A guy who is as electrifying as any player in baseball and can't seem to stay on the field for extended periods of time. He's hurt. So is Carlos Correa. So is Brooks Lee. So is Chris Paddock. So is a guy named Joe Ryan. It seems like if there's a good time to play them, it's now.
Yes, except Carlos Santana, who has 18 home runs. He leads the Twins. I think he has like 4 or 5 in the last 10 games. And I want to tell you something about Carlos Santana. He is not on the list, the annals of Padres killers, except last year when he hit 5 home runs against the Padres with the Pirates and the Brewers. The year before, he hit a home run against them with the Mariners. So, like, he has something like 10 home runs against them in his career, and 6 of them have come in the last 2 years. He's something like a 250 hitter against them in his career, but it's like 500 in the last 2 seasons. He also has a bunch of doubles against them. So Carlos Santana, who was on the Pirates when the Pirates went 5-1 against the Padres last year, it was largely because of Carlos Santana. So that is dangerous. Otherwise, Ryan, absolutely. Now, also not a good time for me to say this, since they came off facing a kid, making his second start yesterday, Bradley Blaylock.
Mm-hmm.
They're facing a kid making his second start today. Bradley Blaylock was the number 12 prospect, or like the number 5 pitching prospect for the Rockies. Mm-hmm. This kid they're facing tonight, Zebby Matthews?
Zebby Matthews. He's
the Twins' number 1 pitching prospect. I'll be honest with you, I got no idea what that means, but he is the Twins' number 1 pitching prospect.
Yeah, he went to Western Carolina. His first name is Zebby. There we go. I now know 2 things about him.
I don't know what his decision was, but I think he did okay. Something like 5 2/3 or something against the Royals, 2 runs in his debut. It was like,
yeah, he's got a 3.6 ERA. He won the game. He's got a 3.6 ERA.
He did. He won the game. Okay. So Padres, they said it again. You know, it's tough. Hadn't ever seen a guy before. He threw well. Okay. Well, I guess that could happen again tonight. Tomorrow they face Bailey Ober, who's been as good as anybody in the majors over the last 2 months. And he beat him last year. But Bailey Ober, something like a 1.8 ERA. And I'm not talking about, he has a string of like, let me look it up here. He has a string of 10 straight quality starts. And I'm not talking 6 innings and 3 runs. I'm talking 9 innings and 1 run, 8 shutout innings. twice going seven innings and allowing two runs, six innings, one run. Like, this guy has been sharp, and he owned them last year, if I remember correctly, because the end of that series was Bob Melvin's first closed door tongue lashing of his team in May.
And he allowed three runs in six innings against them last year.
Okay. So that doesn't sound great, but I remember him being very good.
I know wins aren't the end all be all. And obviously, you know, Moneyball has taught us that. But this guy's got 12 wins on August 19th. He could be a 15 game winner.
Yeah.
I mean,
nothing wrong with that. I mean, like, there are certain times where you go, all right, I know that stat doesn't mean anything, but you got 15 of those? Well, yeah, you pitched well.
15 with an ERA in the mid threes? That's a good pitcher. I mean, it's regardless really of where pitcher. Yeah, regardless of how many times you face the Royals and White Sox. Yeah, he'll face Martin Perez. Michael King pitching for the Padres tonight. Martin Perez pitching for the Padres tomorrow. And then Wednesday, the old 3:40 start time, just to confuse all of us, a guy named Simeon Woods Richardson. He's a 23-year-old rookie. He's been good at 4.62 ERA and five starts since the All-Star break. Not as good as what he was doing earlier in the year. Interesting guy, though. No Padre has ever faced this person ever. And he goes against Matt Waldron. I did want to talk about Matt Waldron a little
bit.
Struggled again. He's had this stretch, gosh, dating back to a game both you and I were at when they were in Washington, D.C. last month. You know, first inning really rough and then settles in a little. Colorado, you thought you saw some of that, and then he just couldn't get through it. 7-10, you know, 4.29 ERA. Where is the guy who is the Padres' most consistent starting pitcher in the first half of the season, Kevin?
You know, I don't know. Maybe he's getting a little tired. I don't know. He's up over his career high, and that would be in the minors too, or he's right at it. Mm-hmm. I believe he's up. I believe he's well past it, actually, by like 20 innings or so. But regardless, it's a lot. It's a lot in the majors. His last four starts, at least five runs in each of them. Now, Coors Field, fine yesterday, but he didn't make the other three at Coors Field. It's like 18 runs in 19 and two-thirds innings. So that's over four starts. He didn't go six in any of them. Like, at this point, it's becoming a trend, and I would say it's on the watch list, right? Like, we are at the point in the season where you're holding this team to a high standard, right? You're just like, I think in this podcast, we've looked at the Twins more than we have other opponents a lot, because I think that, like, this point in the season, every game is important, right? And also, you're looking at things that are good, but you're also looking at things that might be troublesome that could either cause the team problems or be a motivation of why they maybe make some adjustments in how often a guy pitches, when he pitches, whether he pitches, where he pitches. And Matt Waldron is one of those where you go, okay, like, what are you going to get from him down the stretch?
Right. And he's a guy too. I mean, again, as we look ahead to, September and October, you know, I'm starting to wonder, hey, is this a guy who you bring out of the bullpen as kind of a different look? Is this a guy who has earned a spot in a postseason rotation? I mean, I think that that's what he's fighting for here the next three, four starts, is to be a part, to be pitching in significant baseball games in October.
Agreed. Now, here's the deal. If he's going to pitch for you in the postseason, you might want him to go down there and simulate like three innings in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Because his first inning has been rough, and it was something that he seemed to have gotten over, and now it's back.
Right.
Where that's an issue. So that's not the guy that you want to – I agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. And then I have this alarm bell that goes off in my head like, wait, how do you bring this guy out of the bullpen?
Yeah. Yeah. Can we be put on our amateur meteorologist hat for a minute here? Does a knuckleball not knuckle so much in high elevation?
He pitched really well there last time, if I remember. That was the Denver trip I went on.
Right.
So that is something that in the past, I remember I covered Tom Candiotti, and it was like, we're still kind of getting used to the whole Coors Field thing. But I remember we just figured then that it affected everything. It didn't affect him his last start.
Right. Right. It's funny.
Like I said, the three before that weren't at Coors Field.
Right. Wasn't good in Phoenix either. You know, people don't talk about how Phoenix is a bandbox. People don't talk about how dry it is. People don't talk about the elevation there, et cetera, et cetera. I just wonder, and I'm sure that there are numbers here that can either prove me right or prove me horribly, horribly wrong. You know, does a knuckleball knuckle more in cooler temperatures when it's more humid? You know, if you're trying to get the best out of Matt Waldron, is it a night game in September when there's fog rolling in? You know, I'm very curious because, again, it's a pitch nobody throws, right?
And including the Padres are still trying to figure this out too.
Right.
They really are.
Yeah. It's I mean, to me, it's so he is so interesting, and it's a different podcast, but I really do wonder, you know, sort of who they compare him to, right? he's sort of one of one in Major League Baseball. So it's
he's one of one now, but he's also so different than what other knuckleballers have done. You know, I mean, he's part of his effectiveness is when that fastball's working, you know, because he throws the knuckleball harder. And then when he's got a pretty decent fastball when it's working, and especially if the knuckleball's working, then he plays it off both in speed and where he puts it. Like, it's not just that the knuckleball hasn't worked, right? We've seen some other pitches get smacked.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, he's R.A. Dickey. Maybe that's it. I mean, I can't think of anybody else who threw real pitches alongside a knuckleball the way Matt Waldron does outside of R.A. Dickey, probably.
Yeah, and that was if you think about it, that really was a while ago.
Very, 15 years ago, 17 years ago.
I don't know if it was that long, but it was just that this is definitely one of one, and they are clearly still figuring it out. They're trying to figure out like how much even exertion, you know, he uses and all that. So this is they're going through it. Now, whatever it finishes up at, Matt Waldron was a real blessing this year.
Mm-hmm. He got them through some really hard times, right?
Yep.
And again, we're going to have to look back at this when the book of this season is written. You know, I think somebody like a Jerickson Profar, who got them through hard times when everybody was hurt or Manny Machado's elbow wasn't cooperating and he wasn't hitting. You know, there are these guys who kept them floating in like April, May, June that might make September and October possible, which, you know, there's something to be said for that.
It's what it takes to get where they think they're going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin, we're just wrapping up here in Padres' three-game series against the Minnesota Twins. I don't have any great put-you-on-the-spot questions.
Oh, my goodness.
But I know that you get one series off a year, it seems like. Did you enjoy not going to Denver?
I always enjoy not going to Denver, and it's I'm sorry. It's just a lot of things converge there to make it, and primarily the airport and just getting in and out. And because I love the ballpark, absolutely love the ballpark. And the games are much more manageable now with the pitch clock, but they're still weird. And they take a lot out of the players, and they take a lot out of anyone who's like there and covering them. So absolutely. Thank you to Jeff Sanders.
Because it's funny. You're not anti-mountains. You're not anti-
love the mountains. That's where I spent the weekend.
Yeah, you're a mountain guy. Just it's the brand of baseball in Denver that.
And Denver's like mountains in like, how do I say this? Like in name only, like in reality only. Like it's in the mountains. Yeah, sure. But the Rockies are so vast and huge. You cannot know you were in the mountains.
I get kind of a Phoenix vibe from Denver. I don't know why, but it feels a little bit like Phoenix to me.
It has its wonderful places. It's a difficult place to go. For baseball.
What was it like for football?
Loved it. One of my favorite cities. First off, like the atmosphere, that stadium, the Broncos were good. They owned Denver. It was fantastic. You were also, you know, were there for two nights. Right. It was a big event. It was,
Yep. And it's winter. I mean, again, maybe the mountains feel a little bit more like the mountains when it's cooler, you know? 78 degrees in the mountains to me doesn't do anything for me. So
yeah, 92, I guess yesterday. And that can be a rough 92 in Denver.
Yeah, absolutely.
Plus, a lot of times you could get 92 and all of a sudden thunderstorms roll in and you got a 4-hour rain delay. I've had snow delays, rain delays that they thought were going to, they called the game and it never rained. Denver is just a rough place for baseball. I feel bad for people that play there, manage there all the time. Oh, rough.
I feel really bad for a certain guy who manages there now. that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres back home where it's not going to be 92 degrees, thank goodness. 7 games in 7 days this week at Petco Park. 3 against the Twins, 4 against the Mets. Next time I talk to you, Kevin, we'll be talking about the visiting wild card chasing New York Mets. And until then, we'll see you.